to start a new series called The Days of Our Lives. Now, if you watch The Days of Our Lives, please don't think that this is any bash. It is the best soap opera out there. I have no idea, honestly. I don't know. I brought my remote control today, just kind of a remote sermon, all right? So if I want to turn it on or turn it off or fast forward, we can do all that. And maybe you're hungry and you'd like to hit the fast forward button right now. Maybe you didn't get a point and you'd like to hit the rewind. Remotes are an amazing thing. My son and I were watching a movie the other day, and Mission Impossible, the third one. I'd never seen it. I'm an adventure kind of guy, so we sat down, and I was actually pleasantly surprised. I don't want to endorse any kind of movies. I mean, that's up to you, and you decide what you watch and what you don't. In our home, we were watching that, me and my son, and just totally getting into it. I thought, what a great show. Actually, it was cleaner than I thought. But they started the movie in the strangest place. It was almost at the end of the movie when it started. I mean, we turned the thing on. I thought I missed something. I had the remote, and I said, well, what's going on? Here he is. Tom Cruise is tied up. He's sitting on a chair. He's about to be killed. You know, his life's in jeopardy, and his wife is across from him. And the guy's counting down. He says, I'm going to count to 10, and if you don't tell me what I need to know, I need the rabbit's foot. And he's doing, and I'm going, wait a minute. Boom, and it's over. I'm thinking, wait a minute. What just happened? I missed the movie. And then they went back, and all of a sudden it started, and here he is, meeting her. And it went back to tell us the story of what just happened. And I thought, well, that was an interesting concept. That was kind of a different way of doing a movie. I don't know about you, but I didn't like it at first, because I got to see it. I said, well, now I got to wait a whole hour and a half to see what happens to get me to this point. Why not just show me what happened? Did she live or did she die? Did he get away? Of course he's got to get away, right? He's got to get away. He's the hero. The hero always gets away. It's Tom Cruise. I mean, you've got to make a Mission Impossible 4, 5, 6. I mean, it's like Rocky. You know, they're coming out with a Rocky 6. It's true. I'm not making this up. You know, I don't know who he's going to box. You know, Benjamin Franklin. I don't know. And so we're watching this movie, and I said, that was cool. When it got over, I said, that was amazing. It really took me to places where I didn't know I was going to go because I couldn't figure it out. I'm the kind of guy, and my wife and my kids will tell you, as soon as we watch a movie, we'll go to whether it's a theater or on TV or whatever, I'm sitting there telling, I'll lean over and say, okay, here's what's going to happen. And she goes, what? And it's true. She'll tell you. I do this all the time. I have to. I have to know the plot. And so I have this little thing I do, and you know what? I can figure it out. And then I'm bored the rest of the movie. You ever do that? I mean, we went to one just to have fun on a date one night not too long ago, and we're sitting there, and I said, this is what's going to happen. Oh, and that person right there, bad person. I'll look at different characters, and I'll say, they're expendable. They'll be dead before the movie's over. And sure enough, you know all the expendable characters, and you know what's going to happen. And sure enough, there's the movie, and it goes on, and that happens. And then I'm sitting there for an hour and a half going, yeah, spoil sport, boring movie. Because now here it is and we know what's going to happen. You know what? We get that way in life, though. We're living life. And the reason I talk about days of our lives is because we're always hanging on the edge. The one thing about soap operas that makes them so popular and addictive is because they end it and it's not over. And you've got to come back on Monday and see what happened. You do. That's the way life is. But we, as people, we want to know the ending before we get to the end. We want to know. We want to know if Mariah Kirby, a 9-year-old girl, is she going to make her 21st birthday? We want to know that. And so we cry out to God, God, this isn't fair. I want the end of the movie my way. And so we want the end of the movie. We all do it. We all want the end of the movie. And we don't let anyone else write the story. We're all the authors of our own lives. And God says, if you come to me, let me, in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1, 2, and 3, it says, let me be the author and perfecter of your life. The author, the one who writes our story. In Psalm 139, the very last thing, we know it usually during Right to Life Sunday, it says in Psalm 139, You made me. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. You knit me together in my mother's womb. And then he says this, surely all the days of my life were written in your book before one of them came to be. God wrote the entire story about your life when he conceived you in the womb. He knew every one of your days. Your days were numbered. We don't like that. We don't like the ideas that our days are numbered. What if you knew the end of your life? What if you knew the day that you would die and how you would die and everything about it? What if you knew the entire story of your life today, I guarantee you, some of us would be looking for erasers. Some of us would be running for cover. Maybe some of us would end it short saying, nope, it's not going to happen that way. I will not go through that in my life. Maybe there's a reason why God doesn't want us to know the rest of the story. Because we need to allow life to happen. We need to enjoy the moment and allow the experience of the moment. Otherwise, we'd cheat and fast forward, wouldn't we? We'd fast forward. And would we have missed out on some things? Listen, there are some things in my life I would love to have fast forward. I don't know about you, but I'd like to have skipped a few things in my life. There are some very painful things in my life I'd like to skip. You know what else we'd love to do? There's a little button on the remote. Rewind. And some things I would love, have you ever said that? I would love to go back and do this differently. There are so many things I'd love to go and change about my life. I would love to know what I know now and go back to high school. I would love to be in high school. I would like to be 6'2" and 230 pounds in high school. I graduated high school. I was 5'10", 165 pounds. I was about that skinny. I kid you not. I could take my thumb and my finger and I could suck in my gut and I could touch. I don't know how I did that. And my dad used to say, because I used to have this belt and I'd pull it around when I was a sophomore in high school. I could pull it around and I would snap and I'd have this long belt hanging. And my dad said, what are you doing? It's better than kids today hanging the pants down low. And, oh, boo. Sharon wrote a song. Does your pants hang low? Does it travel to and fro? Does it, or what? There's a whole song with it. No. I'm sure you will. We'll have that as a special next week. And I remember, as a sophomore, I went out for football. To qualify the first day of tryouts, you had to bench press 90 pounds. Oh, couldn't do it. And I was like, I'm going home. I can't bench press 90 pounds. I tried to do two chin-ups. Couldn't do two chin-ups. I was not in shape as far as that part went. I would love to go back and just say, oh, I'm ready now. Yeah, what happened? I mean, 60 pounds later, you know, and 3-4 inches of growth after college. Oh, I'd love to go back and change. I would love to go back and rewind a few things in my life. I'd like to rewind a few things I did with my children. And maybe I wouldn't have worked so hard. Maybe I would have taken a little more time off. Maybe that one time that something happened and I looked and said, this is so important, and I thought, you know, I'd rewind. There's probably a few things I'd rewind. I think some of us have those times in our lives. I know I have a few that I'd probably go back and maybe do a little different. Maybe improve it a little bit. I think we can all improve. And so the remote, we can't do that with our lives, but we sure want to do it with our future. We can't do it with our past. And we get frustrated with God because God isn't doing things the way I want them to be done. And so we wait. We do not like to wait as a society. I was sitting in McDonald's the other day, and I was on my way to a meeting. I was in line at the fastest McDonald's in town over on Pine Grove by the bridge. 30-second wait, it says, average time. I'm in line. I got 8 people in front of me, and I'm in a hurry. I pulled out of line, and I went to Wendy's because there was nobody there right next door. I said, I can't wait. I'm in a hurry. I couldn't wait probably 2.5 minutes because I had to get to a meeting. So I got out of line. I went around the corner. I came around. Nobody in line. And 4 cars pulled in front of me before I got there to Wendy's. And Wendy's is not the record time fast food restaurant. And I sat there for about 10 minutes, and I thought, well, that paid off. We try to fast forward our lives. We try to understand the ending. Today is the days of our lives. Maybe your life is left hanging. Maybe you're just waiting to see, will mom and dad get together? Will grandpa be healed? Will my dad's cancer be taken care of? Will the heart, will the finances, will the job, what's going to happen with the economy in Michigan? Where will the gas prices go? You know what, can I tell you? You're talking about things that says, I just want to fast forward life. I just want to step into the future and I want to take over. God, I'm tired of waiting on you and trusting you. I want it myself. And we get so impatient and it conveys right to the Almighty. And I just want to submit to you, Job is a perfect story of this today, to ask the question, because here's what the question is today. The days of our lives, here's the day of our life today. Why do these things happen? Why do bad things happen? Why is this going on? And we want the future. Why do bad things happen? And even to good people, very good people. Why trust it in God? Well, why be a Christian? Because Christianity is no different than non-Christianity. Serving God's no different than not serving God. I mean, people who don't serve God die, and people who serve God die. People who don't serve God get cancer, and people who serve God get cancer. I lost my job, and I'm faithful to the Lord. I don't understand this, God. And here's Job, and he's a perfect example, so we're going to answer that question. You open up your Bibles, you find a man who didn't have the technology that we do. He couldn't go to fast forward. He couldn't go to rewind. Job walks in to the movie late. You ever do that? You ever walk into a movie late? And you're sitting there and you sit down? Or somebody sends you out and you're in the popcorn line. And then you get to the movie and you sit down. You're in the theater. And you're like, it started. And the first 2 minutes had everything you needed to know. And then you're sitting there the whole show going, what happened? People going, quiet! You should have been here when it started. You're going, I was getting you popcorn. Quiet. And you're sitting there going, who's that? Well, that's the person that, when did that happen? At the beginning of the movie, when you were out there. And you missed it. Job comes into the movie late. Watch what happens. Job shows up. Job's just minding his own business in chapter 1. In verse 6, he's minding his own business. Actually, let's skip verse 6 because that's the beginning of the movie. Verse 13 is when Job walks in the theater. Job walks into the theater. He's got his popcorn. He's ready to do life one day at a time. He's got the days of his life. One day when Job's sons and daughters were feasting and drinking, a messenger came. So here's Job in the theater. And he goes, here comes a messenger. What's this? All of your camels, all of your flocks are gone. Another messenger comes while he's standing there, and boom, another one says, fire came, destroyed everything. Another one comes. The Chaldeans came, and they just carried off your army. Their army took off your stuff. Another one comes and says, your kids are dead. He's sitting in the movie going, what just happened? Could you see it? You do this at home. I know you talk to friends or family members, maybe your husband or wife, maybe your kids, maybe your parents. You've been there where you lean over at some point in your life, maybe at a dinner table or in a car, and you go, what's going on with our lives? What just happened? Now, Job came into the movie late. Had he gotten to the theater on time and God allowed him in on the picture, he would have seen a few things. He'd have seen that something was going on long before Job ever showed up. The movie had already started. Listen, can I tell you something? Life has already happened long before you were ever born. And life's going to happen long after you're gone. And the idea that you want to know what happened before and you want to know what happens after is great. But you know what God says? How about we just worry about what's happening today? And you trust me in today, and then I can take care of tomorrow. Because yesterday's just not going to happen all over again. And Job shows up, and the question is this. Now, I want you to go back, because here's the beginning of the movie that every one of us needs to know. I cannot answer the question today. Why do bad things happen to good people? I'm going to answer that next Sunday. Welcome to the days of our lives. Well, so if you thought you were going to be gone, well, too bad. Then you're going to have to get the tape. Job couldn't get the tape or the DVD. You can. I love verse 6. One day an angel came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came. Now, here's the question we have to answer before we can answer the other one. The reason I told you I can't answer it, we can't answer it, but we're not going to do it until next week. Before we say, why do bad things happen to good people, we got to have this question. Does Job fear God for nothing? We have to answer that question today. Do you fear God for nothing? Today, the question for you is, are you moving in a way that God is working, or are you moving in a way that says, hey, if God doesn't work in my life, God can sit this one out. I'll rewrite the story. And so you know what we have? We get the remote control in our hands, and if we don't like the story, we change the channel. You at home, I don't know, any channel changers at your house? Does it drive you crazy? Now, my home, this is my remote. I want you to know, I got this for Father's Day. Yeah, you can watch two movies at once, especially if you have picture-in-picture. I can watch two or three movies. How many of you can, where you can watch, and my wife will say, stop it. Or I'll flip through the channels, and we're going through them. And she's, and now for her, now I got to say this, ladies, you're just different than guys. Guys can go through, and you only need 2 seconds, and you can decide already, don't need to watch this. As you're going through, the girls are looking at it going, whoa, hey, stop, go back. And you're going, for what? I already can tell you it's not worth seeing. How do you know that? Because I saw it for 2 seconds. That's all I needed. And all she needs is to see as you're clicking through. And you got to be careful, guys. You're clicking through. And a guy's looking at a girl and he's about to kiss her. And you got 2 seconds. And you're like, I ain't watching this. And she's going, stop. What was happening? Or you can get to the home improvement thing and you see, you know, the lady's crying and they're coming in to show the house. And you're click, click, click. No football's on. Patriots and Colts. And you're flipping through, and they're like, whoa! And you're like, oh, I just blew it right there. I got to go back now. She's going, go back. You can flip through life. Guys, some of you can flip through. You can flip through, and you know it's not worth seeing. Some of you got to stop at everything and go, huh. Now, my wife's made that way. And I don't know if every woman's made that way, but I think women are made that way. They connect. They see something going on. They are connecting. So that's how I taught my wife how to watch football. Seriously. One of these young men, he was a receiver for the Seattle, Steve Largent, played wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks, and my wife could care less that the Seattle Seahawks were playing my team at the time, the San Francisco 49ers, and Joe Montana. She could care less about football. Hates it. Hated it. And I said, see that guy right there? His kid was born with this disease. Oh, they're doing a story on him. So at halftime, and she watches it. And all of a sudden, she's sitting down because now there's his wife, and she's crying. She's talking about the story, and this guy's such a good Samaritan, a cause for this disease. And she says, can we see? And now when it's on, it's like, isn't that guy? Let's sit down and watch. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we're watching football now. Not that we're watching football, because we're watching something we connect to. Life is that way. And some of us want the remote, and as soon as the story, we've already decided, it's no good. I don't know how many people I meet, as soon as something doesn't go their way, and they don't like the storyline, they have turned God off in their lives. That's a good place right there. I pause. Just turning God off in our lives. We do. We change the channel. God, you just didn't come through for me today. Click, and God's done. I know more people that have turned God off in their lives than people that are turning God on. And my goal is to turn God on in our lives to say, God is God, period. There's a term I want to give to you. It's called altruism. And altruism says this, is God God, period, or is God simply a supernatural Santa? That's what he's become. Folks, I got to tell you, in America, we have bought into something that is not Christian. It is not biblical. It's just not true. And the churches of America are accepting this. And not only are we accepting it, it's getting preached. And it's not, I could go outside the church and say to the world, hey, world, what do you think of this? And they go, well, if I had that, okay. But it's happened inside the church. And the church people are looking going, if this happens, then okay. But if not, I'm going to change the channel. And people are leaving churches and changing churches and doing things with God so fast that you can hardly even keep up on it, that in churches in America, that 80% of the growth in any given church is people leaving other churches because they're changing the channels. Now, this isn't a sermon to keep you at grace. Listen, if you want to change the channels, you change the channels. I will not be offended. Listen, I'm just following God because He's God. And if you come here on a Sunday morning, that's wonderful. If you go somewhere else or if you quit, listen, that's between you and God, whether you turn God off or not. But there's a term called altruism. And the word altruism is this. It means to be good simply because it's right. We raise our kids not to be altruistic. Our whole society is not altruistic. It says, is there anything good just because it's good? We live in a society that nothing is good unless... Well, you may think it's good, and you guys may not think that's good, and you may think a different good about that good, and you may think a different good about this good. Who's good? What's good? Altruism says it's good, it's right, because it's good. In fact, let me explain it to you this way. When our kids grow up, the tendency is this, and maybe you've been there. You're in the shopping store, and I took my daughters on a date last week, and I saw this. We were at Red Lobster. We're having a nice meal. And at the booth next to us, these parents come in and they sit down. This guy had long hair, Larry. I mean long hair. And they come in and they sit down and their kids, they sit between, you've got the kids between them in the booth so the kids can't get out of the booth. And they're screaming, and they're throwing things, and they're doing this, and they're doing that. And I thought, wow, one time. You know, I think about the honeymooners. One of these days, Alice. I mean, one time, and that kid's going to be sitting down right there going, I'm never going to do that again. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I grew up altruistic. My dad's, well, actually, no, I grew up with a conditioned response, okay? I grew up with Pavlov. Some of you are Pavlov dogs. My dad was, boy, you move one inch and I'm going to give you something to think about. And I was like, I remember one time I was getting smart with my dad. See, kids, I just don't understand it. I don't know if it's a different society, but we don't raise our kids altruistic. I remember one time my dad wanted me to do something. He was saying something to me, and I was 17 years old. And 160 pounds, I was cocky. And I remember we were eating corn and some chicken. We were at the dinner table at the farm, and he said something, and I just didn't like it. But I would never talk to the sergeant in a bad way. But I thought I'd get away with something, I went. And I just did one of those little, to him. He said, boy, I'm telling you, that I went. I'm telling you, it wasn't 2 seconds, and I was staring at the ceiling. He went, poof. And I'm laying there going, that hurt. I'll never do that again. Boy, was that stupid. Rewind. I want to do that one over. And I got up and I'm going, oh. And then you try to play it off. Oh, what are you doing? I just had corn in my teeth. You know, I'm trying to play this off like I didn't mean it. The sergeant didn't put up with anything. My dad didn't put up with anything. And I'll tell you what, I learned that there were certain things that were just right and wrong, period. We live in a society like these kids in the restaurant. You'll see those kids in the grocery store if you go out shopping today. And they're pushing the cart, and the kid goes, I want this. And I don't know how many times you see it. Every time I'm at the store, can't have that. Wash here. Oh, thank you. And I'm just thinking, the only reason that you're good is because you're going to get something. And parents even do this. Look, if you're good, I'll get you. If you get good grades, I'll give you. Now, I'm not saying don't reward, but what I'm saying is when they learn that the only reason to be good is because they're going to get something, when we come to God and say, okay, I'm being good. I want health. I want wealth. I want prosperity. No cancer. No sickness. I want my job. I want to be blessed. Is this connecting anywhere? In Job, Satan comes to God and he says, because God says, where you been? He says, I've been all over the earth. He says, have you seen Job? He says, oh yeah, I've seen him. Righteous. The only, and here it is, here's altruism. He says, the only reason that Job loves you, he doesn't fear you for nothing. That's the question we have to ask today. Does Job fear God for nothing? Do you fear God for nothing? Or do you have to have something? Watch this. He says, do you fear God for nothing? And Job's sitting there. He has no idea this is going on. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, things change in his life. And Satan poses the question that God has to answer. And Satan says this. The only reason people love you, God, the only reason that there are grace ministries today, the only reason that people are in church today, the only reason is because you're a supernatural Santa. You take away their prayers, you take away heaven, you take away goodness, and they will curse you to your face because you're not worth it, God. And that's altruism. It says this, is God God, period, or is God only God because He answers your prayers and gives you something? Take away heaven, would He still be God in your life? Take away your prayers. If God answered not one single prayer in your life, not one prayer of your life ever got answered, you still worship Him, God. That's a heavy question. And I want to submit to you, Job comes into the movie late, but Job teaches us a few things. The first thing he does is he gives us the big picture. We get the big picture. Job just had sound bites. I don't know about you if you've just seen parts like trailers to a movie. You just get parts. Job just gets parts to the movie. I mean, he doesn't get to see the whole thing. He gets pieces of this movie. The Bible says in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 10, it says, man, angels long to see what you guys have seen. Even the Old Testament, they didn't get the whole picture. You guys, you know what? If you don't want to see the movie, go buy the book. You know that you have the whole story right here. We get to look at Job and go, Job, man, hey, Job, you could lean over. If you were with Job, you'd say, Job, I got the whole story here. Buddy, it's not because you're a bad person. It's because God is testing you and knows you can handle it. Because Satan is saying nobody loves God. And God's saying, does anybody love me? Do you love God? Do you love God? And people are going, I don't know. I've got the pieces I've got in my life. And so we live our lives and we click. And we get a little piece. Click, 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 oh, click, click. I might stay here for a while. About halfway through the movie, you know, the average attention span is 22 minutes on television. Entertainment that moves so fast. By the way, your eye changes so fast that, you know, there's no such thing as moving television. Those are all just photographs of stills. There's no such thing as moving pictures. That's just not true. They're all just a thousands and thousands of frames of photographs. And we decide when the photo's over, when the picture's done, when we don't like it, we change it. And we only have 22 minutes that we can even keep our attention span. And so people, I mean, even church, well, I hope he doesn't talk too long. I got just this much attention with you. And so people do that. And I'm telling you, we get the bits and the pieces. We don't even know what's going on. And when we get the bits and the pieces, we take, for instance, take your life. You have your life. You have a bit of history. You have a bit of God. You have this much in all of history. Maybe this much in all of it. Maybe you have this much. You live 70 years. What's 70 years compared to history? It's hardly even. Could you imagine the angels flipping through your story? They're in heaven. They want to see you. Click, click, you know, Gabriel's going, whoa, 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 what was that? Well, that was Pastor Mitch. Whoa, it was so quick. Yeah, but that was 70 years of his life, if God lets me live that long. 70 years. And he just went, doop. He says, wait, stop. And he tries to hit the pause button. Your life is just a vapor in heaven. And you know what? We just get to see a piece. And we say, God, I don't want a piece. I want to know everything there is to know. Show me. If God showed you, would it change your perspective of who he is? If God changed. See, we get these bits and pieces, and then we make a whole judgment about God. God, I've seen you. My life, and we live in time. You and I live in time. And you know what today? You know what's going to happen today? You're going to go out and life's going to happen. And we'll judge God based on what happens outside these doors. We're going to walk out these doors. We're going to get in our cars. And life's going to happen. And we're going to judge God based on what happens to us today and tomorrow. And God says, that is such, that doesn't even register compared to who I am. We make judgments about God and we shut him off based on that. If you knew about God, I don't know why Mariah Kirby has cancer. I don't know why my niece at 10 months old died. I don't know why my sister's been married several times. I don't know why things happen in life. I trust God. See, I get a piece of it, and then I want the whole picture. And God says, you can't handle the picture. You can't handle the truth. You want the truth? And we say, we want it all. And God says, oh, if I gave it all to you, you would fall over dead. Because if I even just showed you what's happening spiritually today and showed you the angels and the demons in heaven and unveiled that, you wouldn't even be able to handle it. So why are you asking me for everything when you can only handle what I give you? Live your life and handle what you do. It would change our lives. We don't even know what's happening around us. You say, what's going on in your life? We see the pieces. It reminds me of the high school students in Utah. High school students, I wonder if you guys would be able to pass this test. For those of you in high school, in Utah, they interviewed the seniors in high school and they said, name the states that border Utah. Now, I'm not from Utah, but I'm pretty sure I could get all the states around Utah. That's like asking our students, can you name all the states that border Michigan? I think so. There's Canada. There's water. And there's water. And there's water. And water. And then there's snow. I know the states that border Michigan. 50% of the high school seniors graduating could not name the states that bordered Utah. So they thought, well, this is interesting. Let's take this on a national thing and let's find out what students know. So they went to Florida and they gave a bunch of college freshmen a test. And they said, on a map, they gave a map, they said, find Florida. I'm not kidding you, 33% failed. 33% of the students that they had, those students, not these students, those students, 33. Then they said, find Miami. And 48% of them failed to find Miami on a map, to put a pin on a map, an X mark on a map. Florida, isn't that little thing? They probably were doing Italy. I don't know. But on a world map, they could not find Florida. Almost 50% could not find Miami. These were geography majors coming into the University of Florida. And they were just, the teacher just wanted to do a little test and gave them a geographic map and said, with no markings on it, said, find it. They failed. They couldn't even find what bordered their state. They couldn't find what bordered their lives. They couldn't find out where they are. Can I tell you, folks, we may think we know what's going on, and that's silly. How do you not know where you live? I was watching TV the other day, and I watched in the thing on the Good Morning America, the biggest news, and it hit every news thing that you turn the channel. A lady had a baby and didn't know she was pregnant. You saw, and I'm watching this going, this is perfect for my sermon. This lady couldn't have come at a better time. How do you not know? How do you not know? Oh, that's got to be ridiculous. She says, I just didn't know. And all of a sudden, we came to the hospital. Next thing I know, I'm having a C-section. I had a baby, 7 pounds, 11 ounces. And I said, give me a break. And the doctor they interviewed said, this sounds strange, but it's not unusual. About every 2 years at their hospital, this happens. I said, it's the world we live in. See, we don't get the big picture, but take what you have and look, God has given us the big picture. He's given us stuff to say, I can show you things to change your life. So that's the first thing. God gives us the big picture. You and I have the ability to get the DVD or the book, but we get to see the big picture. You know more about God than anyone else in history. Jeremiah the prophet, who wrote one of the most incredible books in this Bible, did not have as much information as you do. You have Isaiah. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. You have Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and He made a man and a woman, Adam and Eve. You have it all. You have the New Testament. You have Christ's life in the four Gospels. You have the church's beginning after that. You have everything about God that you need to know in this book. And if you don't like the book, buy the movie. You get to see the big picture. And we still turn the channel on God. I know it all, or at least I have the opportunity to know it all, and I still change the channel. And so Job, in verse 13 through 22, he gets the big picture, or at least it's coming to him, and his kids are dead, his business is gone, his transportation is stolen. The second thing is this, if you get the big picture, you got to trust the credits and not the critics. You go to a movie, you ever hear the critics, Siskel and Ebert and all these guys? Well, one of them's not there anymore, I don't know who the new guy is. Trust the credits and not the critics. Listen, critics will come along. I have people tell me all the time, Pastor, you got to go see this movie. You ever have people do that? And as a pastor, I try to be careful with my family, what we watch, what we don't watch. I don't go by the world's rating, RX, or no, RG, what is it, R? Yeah, X, yeah. No, I go by that. No, wait a minute. Okay, just take that right off the tape. I am red. The world, yeah, I want to hit the rewind button right there. There's irony in that. There's G, PG, PG-13, R, NC-17, all that stuff. The world has rated sin. They tell you some sin's okay, some sin's not okay. When you're 18, you get more. When you're 21, you can have a whole lot more. And the world has decided what sin is. I don't go by that. That's what I meant to say. I don't go by what the world has said. I mean, you can watch a PG-13 movie and say, that's just not appropriate for your family. I can go watch a rated R movie, such as The Patriot or The Passion of Christ, and that's fine for my family with supervision. So what I want to say is this. I don't trust the critics. I trust the credits. Who gets credit for what I'm doing in my life? And in my life, there are critics in my life. There are critics in your life. You know what I want to do? I just want to shut them off. I am so tired of the critics. Someone else trying to tell me the way my life ought to be run. And you have more people that will give you advice on how to do life. You know what I say? Trust God. Let me give you an example. And if you have your Bibles, right there, his wife, Job's wife, becomes a critic and not the credit. In chapter 2, verse 7, or verse 9, it says, after all this happened, I love this, his wife said to him, now, I don't know about your marriages. Can I tell you? You got it made. I don't care what you're going through. You got it made. This guy, listen to what his wife says. His wife said to him, are you still holding on to your integrity? Curse God and die. I don't know what your marriage is like. I don't know what you think your marriage one day will be like. That's not a good marriage. When your wife looks at you and you're sitting there and he's got boils now, he's got scabs, the kids are dead, and she's looking at him going, this is your fault. This is your fault. He's got three best friends. I know about you guys. I got some pretty good friends. And I talk to them all the time. His three best friends, Bildad, Zophar, and Eliphaz. Bildad, Zophar, and Eliphaz. Those are great names. And here's what they say. Each one of them says something. Bildad, Zophar. Boy, that's loud. Can you turn that down just a tad? Is that what it is? Changes when I do that? It does. Here's what one of them says. One of them says, a word secretly was brought to me. Can a mortal man be righteous, more righteous than God? That's Eliphaz in Job chapter 4, verses 12 through 17. He goes, Job, you're a sinner, man. You have messed up your life and God is getting you good. You walk around here all high and mighty, all rich. You got a happy family. You got a happy wife. You got all these sheep. You got all this. You ever look at people? You know, people are envious of people who are successful. I find out as soon as someone gets successful, people want them to go down. I couldn't believe, and I'm going to say it, NSYNC, their success was huge. And everybody was like, oh, going crazy, this band. And then all of a sudden, it was like they were successful. Well, we don't like them anymore. Because as soon as someone gets successful, somebody is going to throw dirt on them, as we heard from Tom. They're going to throw it in the well. They're going to bury you in your well. As soon as you do well, they want to bury you in your well. That's true. And so here's this guy going, yeah, you walk around here all like you and God are like this. He says, you're a sinner. And everybody knows that sinners get punished because bad people get bad stuff. And so it's true. Not true. And then his other buddy, Zophar in chapter 11, verse 4, says this. He said, you say to God, my beliefs are flawless, and I'm pure in your sight. Oh, how I could wish I could speak, or how I wish that God would speak and he would open his lips against you and disclose to you the secrets of wisdom. Here's his advice. He's going, I wish God would tell me what you're doing because you're a jerk and God is getting you for it, and everybody knows you have a secret and you're getting punished for your secret. The philosophy of our day is still this way. Bad people get punished. Good people get blessed. It's bad philosophy. It's not even true religion. You know what? The sun rises on the righteous and the unrighteous. Do you know that when it rains and you pray for a sunny day, the farmer's praying for a rainy day for his crops. And when you're praying for rain that day, the farmer's praying for sun that day. So are you ready for this? It doesn't matter what you're praying. It doesn't matter what they're praying. The Bible says it rains on the righteous and the unrighteous, and the sun shines on the just and the unjust. Are you ready for this? God is going to work out his big picture in our lives, and he doesn't care about the critics. He cares about the credit. God wants to do what's right, not what you think. Because you think you know what's going on. And that day you're praying for your picnic, some guy's out there saying, God, if I don't have rain today, I'm going to lose everything in my farm. And you get rain, you go out, you go, oh, it's a rainy, horrible, nasty day. And instead of that, we should be blessing God, saying, God, I got a big picture, and I trust you because you get the credit for the rain, and you get the credit for the sunshine. But we walk around as Christians saying, God, give me my clicker, because today didn't happen the way I needed today to happen. Click, and we turn God off. Folks, we got to stop being so fickle with God just because you want to write the story instead of God. We need to get the big picture and we need to trust the credit and not the critics. And I've got critics in my life that have told me more things than I could even share. I brought a snow globe in last week just to let you know that life is like that snow globe. Everybody wants to shake it up and everybody's got their opinion on how it goes. But the only thing that matters is the one who makes it and the one who makes you. And when life is all over, who gets the credit for life? And you stand before the throne of God and you stand there before a holy and awesome God. And when he speaks, it sounds like the sound of rushing waters. When he opens his mouth, like a fire and a sword coming out of his mouth. And there's wings on these angels that stand around him singing, holy, holy, holy. Holy is, you will bow down to the God, this King, and you come in before this throne, and there's a crystal sea laid out, and there's this gold, and he's the light. There's not even a lamp in the place because he is shining as bright as the heaven. And you come before this God when life is over, and you say, you were the author of my life. You were the perfecter of my life. And you had the power to make it perfect. And I came and I wanted to rewrite the story. And God says, don't do it. Because somebody came along and said, what are you following church for? What are you going with God for? What are you doing that for? I mean, that's not going to get you anywhere. No, it's going to get me everywhere. Because I follow God, not because of what he does in my life. I follow God because what I can do in his life. You see, we've got it backwards. We think somehow God is there to serve us as a supernatural Santa. And God says, I've never been your Santa Claus. I am not your magic genie. Go get yourself a lamp if you need that. Go buy yourself a crystal. Go get yourself a rock. Find yourself some voodoo witch doctor. Go out and get your horoscope. Go to the Chinese fortune. Do what you want to do and go live your life your way. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that's the way it ought to be. And God says, you keep asking all these critics about life. God says, trust the credit, and the credit is mine. I love what the Apostle Peter said when the church started. They grabbed him, they threw him in jail, said, you're starting a church? You're not starting a church. I don't know how many people told me not to start a church. I lost my credentials in a denomination because I started a church. I said, isn't that what we're supposed to do? Start churches? They said, you're no longer having credentials. I said, well, I'll get credentials somewhere else. God's given me credentials. I will not listen to my critics. And I asked the gentleman I spoke to, who I served faithfully for 20 years. Now, that's a hard thing to do. I submitted 20 years of my life into a thing. And they said, you're not going to do this. I said, but I prayed about it and God told me to do this. And I know God told me to do this. And they said, you're not going to do it. I said, have you prayed about it? And the words I was told was, no, I don't have to pray about it. You're not going to do it. And I said, I will not trust the critics. I will trust the credit. And the credit goes to God. Now, I'm not saying that to bash or to bang or to hit some pots and pans. Listen, folks, we have critics in our lives, and they may seem like godly people. Zophar, Bildad, and Eliphaz, the guy's wife, said, curse God and die. This is the solution so that we can get on with our lives. People are going to say things in your life to say, let's move on. Let's just move on. Let's do something else. And can I tell you, you got two choices. Peter said it. When they grabbed him and they arrested him and John, and they did to them, by the way, and most people don't realize this. They don't even think about it. They always talk about Jesus being whipped so bad 39 times with that cord that it would expose the vital organs of their body from the backside. And when Christ was on that cross, you could see literally into the cage of his rib area. He went into anaphylactic shock, or not anaphylactic, he went into hypervolemic shock. And that means you've lost all of your blood so bad that the only part that's left is water gathers around your heart to protect the life that's barely ebbing in your body. And that's why when they speared him, it said first water flowed and then blood, because that shock was created because of the severe beating. John and Peter are taken before, they beat them the same way. Paul, the apostle, had it happen three times in his life and lived through it. So folks, I want to tell you something. Here's a righteous man. So if you're going to tell me the story's supposed to be happy ever after, you got another thing coming. That's a bill of goods that Satan is selling to the church. They whipped him and then they threw him into prison. Then they brought him out and said, now what are you going to do? And they said these words in Acts chapter 4. Is it better to obey God or men? My critics or the credit? You have to decide. And on this movie, on this show, folks, I'm going to let you know that God is God, period. And the final thing is, if you're going to get the big picture, if you're going to trust the credit and not the critics, the last thing you need to know is life is not happy ever after. I want you to know that. That is a lie. I don't know who sold it to you. I think it started with humanism. Humanism says the end of all being is the happiness of man. You just need to be happy. Can I tell you something? I don't know who sold you that. Happy. Does God want you to be happy? Yes. Did God come to make you happy? Yes. But as a byproduct, not as the prime product. God did not come along and say, my whole goal is so that you just be happy your whole life. That's just, I mean, He came and that's a byproduct of your life. Happy deals with happenings, the things that are happening in your life. And if things aren't happening well, you're not happy. He came to give you peace and joy. Happiness can be the byproduct, but it is not the prime product. The prime product that God came is to give you a peace in the midst of your storm. I don't know about you, I love storms. My wife and I will set our lawn chairs out on the porch, get some popcorn, and we will watch storms. See, because happiness isn't the thing we're looking for in storms. We're looking for the peace and the power, and we trust God. In the storms of our lives, we can have joy. And that's something that you can't buy, folks. We don't have it for sale. You can't go down to the store and get it. They're not selling it down at the liquor store. You can't get it on the internet. It only comes through the salvation of Jesus Christ. And that's the only place you can get it. Happy ever after. What a What a farce. Humanism came along and said, the end of all being is the happiness of man. And then fundamentalism came along and said, well, we believe in Jesus Christ. We believe in the deity of Christ. We believe in the death, burial, and resurrection. We believe in the Word of God. And fundamentalism came along, and you know what happened? People said, well, if I say a few uh-huhs to a few questions, do you believe in Jesus? Uh-huh. Do you believe in the Bible? Uh-huh. Do you believe that He died for your sins? Uh-huh. Then God's going to make you happy when you die. And so fundamentalism said the end of all religion is the happiness of man when he dies. And then liberalism came in and humanism, and they melted together. And now it's what we see in America and the world today. And it's liberalism. And it says the end of all religion is the happiness of man while he's alive. And we think that religion is simply our way to make us happy now. You got problems? You need to come to Jesus. Listen, I've come to Jesus. I've been with Jesus for 25 years. Do I still have problems? No, they're gone. I don't have any. Not a one. And so we bought this bill of goods. Listen, God doesn't need another definition of Christianity. God needs a demonstration of Christianity. The world outside isn't looking going, well, can you define what Jesus is so I could say, uh-huh. They don't need that. They need a demonstration that you walk out and say, no matter what's happening in my life, like Job, though he slay me, yet shall I praise his name. Job said, naked I came into the world, naked I'm going to leave the world. Blessed be the name of God. He said, you know what? God is God, period. And it doesn't matter what I've done in my life. It doesn't matter what's happened in my life. God will always be God. And when we can get that concept, we can have it. See, it's not happy ever after. I go to movies and I got them figured out. You know, they always make them happy ever after. I went to a show one time and there was only six of us in there. My wife and I went on a date. Went to see that thing, Tom Hanks, years ago, Castaway. Went to see that great show. One man in the whole movie, basically, on an island. I thought, I'm not going to be able to sit 2 hours and just watch one man ripping open coconuts on an island. And the story was, there he is. He's shipwrecked. He's like a UPS or some kind of delivery guy, and the plane goes down. And I don't know how many years, 6 years, 7 years. He's on this thing for years, and they think he's dead. His wife goes on. This gal goes on, gets married. He gets rescued. And the only thing that gives him hope is this box. This one package. It's the only one he doesn't know because everything washes up and he uses them and he's resourcing. And a great adventure story. I mean, I'm a guy. I'm like, rrr, rrr, rrr. You know, he's in a cave, rrr, you know, fishing, doing all that stuff. I think, there's a guy. Now, there's a man's man. He's got the long beard and the long hair. He did. There's a man's man. I keep going over here. After today, I'm done. And Tom Hanks survives, gets rescued, but he holds on to this one box. And at the end of the whole thing, he decides to take it back. His wife, she's gone, she's married, she's got a life, everything falls apart. At the end, I'm sitting in the movie, just my wife and I and a couple couples behind us, and we're watching. At the end of the movie, he gets to this crossroad in Kansas or some country lane, and he's looking for where to deliver. He goes up to deliver this thing. It's the fulfillment of his life, the hope that he had, the thing that kept him going on the island. He gets to the end of his life, the end of this thing, he rings this doorbell, and there's all these angel wings that this lady makes. Wings of hope. And he gets there, I'm thinking, oh, this is great. And in my mind, I'm figuring this whole thing out, right? Like, this is going to be great. And I'm writing the end of this. I'm not rewriting. I don't know the end. I'm in my mind doing my game. The person's not home. I say she. I'm kind of giving it away. I didn't know that. They're not home. He drives down the road, and he stops. He gets a map out, and he's got the box. He's trying to figure out what he's going to do with his life. This lady comes up. Can I help you? Yeah, I was just looking to deliver this pack. That's me. And here's this really good-looking gal. She's single. And she owns this Angels of Hope, Mercy, kind of making these things. Perfect, they've met. And he's saying, you know, the wind's kind of blowing, the winds of change. And his map kind of goes. And she goes, well, where are you going to now? And it was perfect. I had the ending. You know, happy ever after. Jesus, I don't know. I guess wherever life takes me. And he gets in his car and he drives away. I jump up and the credits start. And this is true. I jumped up out of my seat and yelled, no! That's not how it ends! And I turned around to these people I never met in my life, and I said, here's how it ends. Okay. She says, where are you going? He says, you're the one with the box that saved me. She says, why don't you come have some coffee? This is great. Angels of Hope, message. We're going to go. They get married, happy ever after. And the couples went, yeah! We like your ending. I said, me too. This was dumb. I'm never going to watch this again. And I haven't. Because it didn't end the way I wanted it to. Because I wanted it to happy ever after ending. And it didn't. So let me let you know as we go from this place, life isn't happy ever after. He says, I'll never go to the show when you're there. Let me change it. Life isn't happy ever after. Life is happy after ever. When life is all said and done, it doesn't matter what happens. You will stand before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and He will take care of everything that you've ever wondered. Can I tell you, it's worth it. It's going to be worth it. All of this pain and all this suffering, we'll talk about next week, because there is an answer. We're going to go a little bit deeper into Job. Can I tell you something? Happy after ever. Happy after all. When it's all said and done, I've read the end of the book. And they always say, we win. More than we win, we get it all. We get the big picture. We get the creditor, the author of our lives. It's happy ever after. It's happy after all. It's going to be okay, folks. God is in, He's in the interest of our lives. I've asked someone to come and play. I have a story here. Do you have that? I'll just tell you. We're gonna close our benediction with this. There's a guy by the name of Horatio Spafford. He was a multi-millionaire in Chicago. Not Michigan. I say Michigan helped build Chicago. All the trees got cleared. And I've been doing some studies on it. Amazing how Chicago started it in the 1800s where they really turned and cleared all the land and the forest out of Michigan and built it. There was a guy that made his millions. Horatio Spafford. And when the Great Fire of Chicago burned everything down, he lost everything. He had very little left. He decided to take his family to Europe where they often vacation. And so his wife and his three beautiful daughters, he sent them on ahead in a ship. He says, I'll catch up with you. I'm going to close out some business and then we just need to get away for a while. This great Chicago fire was too much. And so they did. They went on ahead and came back the response. The ship had gone down. And his wife had written back in a telegram, saved alone. I could imagine losing my girls or my boys or anybody. Lost all three of his kids, his daughters, his beautiful daughters. The wife said, saved alone. So he boarded as quickly as he could the next ship. And he made his way out and he told the captain, it was late in the evening when they got to near the spot where the ship went down, he said, would you wake me in my cabin? And so he came along and the Spaffords were a very godly family, a very Christian family. And he got up and he walked out onto the edge of that ship on the deck. And he had a pen and paper with him. And as he sat there looking into the dark water, thinking that his daughters were down there somewhere at the bottom of the ocean, wrote these words. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, Thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul. You see, he wasn't looking for a supernatural Santa Claus. He was looking for the God of all comfort. See, God was already God in his life, and he wasn't going to change the channel because he lost his daughters. God was God. And if God authored this, then God knew. And he wrote those words, it is well with my soul, it is well with my soul. And I thought, what a great benediction to understand today. Can you sing those words and say, God, today I commit to you. We don't change the channel when things get rough. That's the time I need you the most. It is well with my soul. You are still God, no matter what. And so as a benediction, shall we stand together?